Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 40, for April 28th, 2010. Palm Lives. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToTraining. Improve learning, participation, and access to training programs, and save a bunch with GoToTraining. For a free trial, visit GoToTraining.com. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Google, in which we cover all the latest from Google and the cloud. Joining us, I didn't expect it, but it's so exciting. He's here. He made it from the airport. Are you JFK, LaGuardia? Where are you?
I'm at Miami Airport.
Miami Airport, Jeff Jarvis. And where are you flying, Jeff?
Back home to Newark, as you can hear from above. I'll put it on mute now. They're telling me what the time is. So useful.
Oh, it's 3 o'clock. You know where your flight is.
How late your flight is.
Yeah. So I thought you were on Howard Stern this morning.
That was on Monday. I was down here to speak to Gucci.
To Gucci, the handbag manufacturer?
Yeah. I was hoping to leave with some nice loafers, but didn't.
All right. That's good to know.
Yeah, I was on Stern on Monday. We can talk about that in a few minutes.
I would love to.
I also then spent a few hours with IBM about Lotus Notes.
Oh, so we'll cool. That was your punishment, huh?
Yes. The price I paid for fame.
The price he paid. Also with us, always glad to have her, Gina Trapani from smarterware.org.
And howdy.
Howdy. And you're now working on Anil Dash's enterprise, Expert Labs, is that it?
Expert Labs, yeah. I'm working at Expert Labs, and I'm writing for Fast Company.
And congratulations, by the way. One of the most influential women in tech. She's in the Evangelist column.
Well deserved.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd put you in the Evangelist column, to be honest.
I was surprised by that, too. But I'll take it. Hey, it's a great list of some smart ladies. I'm very honored to be on it. But Katarina's, I guess I think that this counts as my evangelizing. TWiG does.
Yeah, because you're really a developer. I don't know if there was a developer category. I don't see you as an evangelist for anything in particular.
I don't know. A lot of people have told me they bought a Nexus One because of me. So.
Oh, maybe you are.
I've joined Gina's religion.
By the way, Jeff, you were already there.
St. Gina
of the Holy Android. I think you're right.
God, I'm a recovering Catholic. Please. Don't say that.
Our Lady of Open Source.
also here, really glad to have him. He's the host of our Windows Weekly program, the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and news editor for Windows IT Pro, the author of Windows 7 Secrets, Mr. Paul Thurrott. Hey, Paul.
Hello. How you doing?
Thanks for joining us. We weren't sure if we were going to get Jeff in Miami, so we brought Paul in to back us up.
I'm just going to play video games until you need me.
No, we need you. Because you know why? What prompted me is I got an email from somebody saying, well, I guess This Week in Google isn't really a cloud computing show because you don't ever cover Microsoft's cloud initiatives.
Well, it is This Week in Google.
Well, we almost call it This Week in Cloud Computing or This Week in the Cloud, but we thought...
TWiG doesn't sound as good as TWiG, so...
Yeah, TWiG.
I agree.
So,
hey, can I derail this for 1 second?
Would you please?
There's a big Palm announcement coming up at 5 o'clock.
Must be a sale, right? No, I didn't hear about it.
Is this? I'm not sure if this is public yet.
Tell us. Scoop it.
I'm not sure if I can.
How do you know about it?
I got an email about it from the company that is announcing it.
That's not Palm?
I didn't say
how many
that.
Syllables?
I'm not sure. There's no accompanying, it doesn't say, hey, you can't talk about this, but I'm not sure if I should. I'm not,
charades.
Okay, I guess it's not.
It doesn't say embargo. You can say it.
Let me look.
Let me think. Look, is it? It's okay. So this
did
is going to be
did
an
you
announcement.
Buy a stolen phone from them?
Yeah, really?
No, I did not.
What is your guess?
Yeah, I don't want to pull a Gawker Meteor.
No, no.
So, oh, wait, you see, Gawker Media's lawyer's line is that they didn't buy the phone.
Yeah,
they bought the story.
Let me just make sure.
They bought the story. The phone just came with it. We
it's
were
your
just.
Happy meal.
We in fact, they said something even worse. We took the phone so we could return it to Apple. We bought the story.
That's so nicked it.
Yeah. That's parsing it. So do you think, okay, so obviously somebody bought Palm.
Yep.
I'm thinking HP.
That's a good guess. Let's leave it at that.
Okay, so he doesn't know if he can say it, but that's really interesting. What would HP want? It must be the patents. Unless HP is going to get in the phone business. Does HP do the...
HP already makes phones, yeah. They make Microsoft phones.
They do?
Yep.
And along with Dell now.
Or at least they used to.
They used to, yeah. It has been a while.
No, they do. They still do.
They do.
Yeah, in fact, they still use that iPac brand.
They still make iPac? Oh, that's the old Compaq.
Yeah, they still use the brand.
Interesting. So it must be a pure business phone. Yes?
I don't know. Here it is.
Searching.
$400.
Oh, you mean the existing phone? Yes. That. Yeah. Yes, Leo. That phone is a. That's a pure business.
And it's running Windows Mobile 6.5.
I bet it is not.
It's pretty old.
6.5. Yeah.
The Glisten. The HP Glisten.
Sure.
That is just a terrible name. I'm sorry. But it looks like a BlackBerry phone, I have to say, the Glisten.
Yeah.
That could be a Palm phone. I could see them putting WebOS on there. Could this be No.
I'm sure they're going to go with the existing devices and so forth. Huh. Anyway, sorry about that. I got a little spaz attack.
You can say
there.
It now. Engadget has published the story. HP buys Palm. They don't believe in embargoes.
There you go. Well, HP has just announced. Doesn't say anything about embargo.
Holy moly! HP has announced it's acquiring Palm too. You want to guess a number, Jeff Jarvis? You're the number guy. $1.2 billion.
No idea. Wow. Absolutely no idea. $5.
$1.2 billion, which works out to $5.70 a share. The deal closes July 31st, which marks the end of HP's third fiscal quarter. Current Palm CEO John Rubinstein is expected to remain with the company.
Mm-hmm.
Press release just came out.
It did.
More details at 5 p.m. And Paul, you scooped it. That's great. We practically beat Engadget.
I love this. I love this Wednesday schedule.
It's great. We actually have news.
That's happening as we talk. It's real time.
The chat room says, we told you about this 20 minutes ago.
Losers.
If you would just read the chat room, Leo, you would know everything. All right. I'm trying to do a show here. Do you mind? I do look at the chat room. So, by the way, this is not the only acquisition that broke today. Apple has announced that it's buying Siri, which is a Apple iPhone app that's quite impressive. It's a voice-enabled app, but you could do things like make me a dinner date or get me tickets to the show. It understands. It does a search. Siri apparently has an API that some sites work with, and if it works with those sites, then Siri will act as almost a personal assistant. It's a very interesting acquisition for Apple. So this was the day to spend money. Did Google buy anything today?
I don't think so.
Not that I know of.
Shocking.
So Siri is an iPhone app?
Yeah.
And they bought it?
They bought it.
What's the state of voice input on the iPhone right now? It's not as far along as Android. Like, there isn't a microphone on every... You don't get the transcription.
There is a Dragon Dictate on the iPhone. You don't get the same thing you get with Android 2.1 where you have every time you see a keyboard you could dictate. No. But Google, of course, has its app on the iPhone. And so all the Google app, you know, that Google search stuff is all there, voice search stuff.
Okay.
And Siri is only 3GS, right? And iPod?
Probably that's the case, yeah. Let me look here. It says, remember Siri's confirmed in an interview with PC Magazine. They filed with the FTC for an early termination request. That is, I guess, to fast track regulatory approval. Siri launched in February. I mean, it's a pretty new product. It's a natural language iPhone app. You type or speak into the phone with a natural language request, such as book me a table at 7:30 tonight for 2 at Il Fornaio, or find out where Avatar is playing in 3D near my office. If I had an iPhone here, which I do not, I would show you. It's actually really impressive.
Is this the first app, like iPhone app, that Apple has purchased from a third party that we know of?
Yeah, well, this is like a Twitter moment, isn't it?
It is kind of like a Twitter moment.
According to Altimeter's Michael Gartenberg, an analyst. He says he believes Apple will tightly integrate Siri and that the deal erased the advantage Google's Android offers with its tightly coupled search. Be interesting.
That makes sense.
If you put it everywhere in iPhone 4, then you absolutely have parity.
Yeah, because that is one of the things, right, that Android offers, just, you know, voice to text everywhere, right? So
it's one of the things when people ask me, why do you use a Nexus One? It's the first thing I say is because I can dictate SMS. I can dictate anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or is this more against local and Foursquare and all that?
It has that application as well. I mean, it's natural language. It's location-based. It's very smart. Siri is quite impressive. People like Robert Scoble have said many times, you know, this is a game changer, Siri. Interesting acquisition.
The local stuff, is it using APIs or is it doing all the local stuff itself?
My understanding is that it's not doing scraping. It might be doing some scraping, but that in most cases it works best if it's talking to a site like 777 Film or whatever that understands a Siri request and will hand it back the right information.
I see.
For instance, OpenTable works very well with. So if you do a dinner reservation, OpenTable and Siri have a language that they can talk back and forth on. I love it. It works really well. And it's also a beautiful UI. It's a very intriguing UI that kind of takes something that's pretty difficult to understand and use and makes it fairly simple by giving you a lot of examples and so forth.
It's on the iPad too, Leo.
Oh, yeah, I should probably show it on the iPad, of course.
I hate to remind you of your toy.
I have I have the means.
Proves my point. You forget you even have it. You know,
it's just integrated into my life. Oh, Paul's going to hate me in a minute. I'm sorry. He's playing Modern Warfare 2. We're safe. Paul, are you there?
Sorry, I was writing up a little blog post about this HP thing.
Okay, go ahead. Please do that. It's a big story. It's breaking.
Are you still making cat sounds on your iPad? Did I miss something?
You missed nothing. You know, this is a good question. Do I have Siri on here? I don't. I think I took it off, so I will install it right now. And because I took off a lot of non-native iPad apps because I just don't like that little interface. But I'll put Siri on here. We can play with it. Meanwhile, other stories in the Googleverse. Gina, you said there are a lot of small stories.
There are a couple of small stories. They launched a Google Earth integration with Google Maps this week. So there's a browser plugin that you install on Mac or Windows, and you get Google Earth views in Google Maps. It's pretty neat.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is pretty neat.
So if you do, how is that different from the satellite view?
It's got that Google Earth feeling to it. Actually, that's a really good question. It's similar to the satellite view.
Does it support KML?
That also is a good question. So you go to earth.google.com/plugin. You can install the plugin. And let's see. Oh, they've got a couple of cool little demos here.
Well, let's take a look. It's a web browser plugin, lets you navigate and explore. Oh, I see. Yeah, there is a big difference there because you have that 3D.
The 3D building experience. Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. A lot of people have used Google SketchUp to design. You know, you go to New York City now, almost all the buildings are 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so when you have the plugin installed, you get a little button on the upper right-hand side. There's like map, satellite, and then there's an Earth option. Which is pretty neat. And it's just kind of like the Google Earth experience, you know, in Maps with that 3D.
Works on Chrome, IE7, Firefox, and Flock on Windows. Does not work in Chrome on OS X, just Safari and Firefox on OS X. Huh.
And you can do that thing where you can pan kind of, if you hold down the shift key and click and drag, you can pan kind of like horizontally. So that makes I'm not describing that well.
Yes.
But like I'm in Manhattan right now.
You could change the angle.
Change the angle. Right,
you could do that with Street View though too, can't you now? I can't remember. It's all merging together into one.
It is.
Big thing.
It is. It is.
Let me show you real quickly. I can show you Siri because I've installed it now.
Cool.
On the iPad. So there it is. And unfortunately, you can see this is why I took it off in the first place. It does ask immediately if it can use your location data. I think I'll have to log into my Siri account, so I'll show you some more of that in a second. Let's see. Hi, I'm Siri, your new personal assistant. Please tap to get started. Just a sec. So you do have an account, an online account. Or they verify. I guess they verify your... I remember this took a little while before. Maybe they save your information in the cloud. It's so funny typing on this giant keyboard. This giant iPhone keyboard on an iPad. It's just, you feel like you're in Toy Town. Oh, it's already registered. Yes, this is my address. Okay, let's see.
First, we're going to talk about why you uninstalled me.
Yeah, right. One of the attributes of natural language is I have a feelings. And you hurt my feelings badly when you took me off your iPhone. All right, I guess I have to do this whole thing to reset my password. We'll worry about this later. But it's a really cool app, and you can see that it's doing some really interesting UI stuff that is not typically Apple kind of a UI stuff. Let's see, what else?
I think, Gina, I think you raised an important point. Is Apple now going to start buying apps?
We now know what time it is.
I just want to know that local time is 4:30.
Why do they do that? Why do they do that? People wear watches. I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting to me that they bought an iPhone app. Very interesting. I mean, it kind of gives a goal. You know, iPhone app developers can have a new goal. Have Apple acquired.
Right. Let's get bought out by Apple.
Exactly. I'm playing around with this Google Earth and Maps, and it's really cool. It does that thing where Earth like zooms out and you see the whole planet, and then kind of, you know, rotates around to the place you want to go. I went from Brooklyn to San Francisco, and it does that. You have the kind of the full like rich Earth experience right in Maps. It's in the browser. But that's, you do need that cool extra plugin, which is you know, just this extra step, installation step. The other neat geo thing that came out is an Android Sky Map, which is an Android app that you kind of. And I think there's something like this available for the iPhone as well. You launch the app and you kind of point it up to the sky, and it shows you the constellations as you move, like based on your location, which is pretty neat. And mobile Firefox, Fennec, is available pre-alpha for Android right now.
Is that going to be better than the built-in?
Right now, it is definitely not. It's a huge download, and it crashes on my Nexus One. It's very, very pre-alpha. It's like pre-nightly build even. But it's kind of neat to see. I have some nostalgic feelings about Firefox. I love Firefox, even though Chrome is getting to be increasingly the more attractive choice because it's just so fast.
I love Chrome.
Chrome is getting better and better. Of course, we don't have all the plugins. That is one reason Chrome is better.
Right. Which browser do you guys use full time right now? Chrome or Firefox?
Chrome here.
Paul, are you a Chrome guy?
Yeah, I am a Chrome guy.
Yeah. It's just so fast. It's so speedy. And Firefox has just gotten...
I used Firefox for years, but it's just no comparison.
It's just gotten... it's turned into
bloaty.
A pig. Yeah.
A little bloaty.
And partly I think that, you know, I think that's kind of doing it a little bit of a disservice because it's all the plugins that we use that make it bloaty. Okay, so here we go. So now this is Google Maps in the browser with the plugin installed. And so what's going to happen here is what? Okay. Oh yeah. It's definitely more Google Earthy, isn't it?
Yes, it's super 3D.
Yeah.
Wow. Does it integrate well with Street View?
I don't know. Let me see.
It doesn't look like the Street View Pegman. Usually, you see the yellow Pegman. Doesn't seem to even be an option.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? So you have that. It just adds a tabs. You got map. You've got satellite, and now I have an Earth tab, and it did. It did kind of look the same, but notice it did a little angling thing. Ooh.
Yeah, hold down the shift key and click and drag, and you can change your angle.
Ooh.
Oh, there we go.
Yes, pretty. That's the Google Earth.
Now, if I were actually somewhere where people had mapped buildings.
Your jaw is going off.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
The Titanic is listed as a location on the left side.
Is it?
Yeah, click on...
let's go to the Titanic. I didn't even know. So this is the underwater stuff.
So funny. Yeah, it shows you the
Titanic Ditch,
stuff.
Colorado. Is that it? Titanic. Oh dear. I mean, you're getting the Titanic on your left side.
Yeah. So
I've got the Matterhorn. Oh, it's random. I see.
It's random. Yeah.
Gateway Arch, Hoover Dam, CN Tower, Niagara Falls, Coliseum, Titanic, Atlantic Ocean. Let's go. We're going to go visit the Titanic, kids.
Yeah, so it does that zoom out and then zooms you in.
Oh, boy. Ooh, well, ooh, ooh,
oh, going no. underwater.
I hope you got your Aqualung on. Oh, look. Wow, there's two halves. That is amazing. Okay.
That's pretty neat.
That is freaking cool.
It's really neat.
Can I zoom in on it? I guess I can. Oh, man. Can I go in the windows? Wow. That's kind of eerie.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's kind of brown and split in half.
Yeah.
But it's neat to just click on a place and zoom out and fly over to it.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a great way, Jeff, instead of sitting in the Miami airport? Just click
just
and go.
Me.
Imagine I'm home.
Just go. Click and go. Here's the Tower Bridge in London. Yeah, that's I think this is a nice addition. And here's a 3D. Somebody's done in SketchUp a 3D of the Tower Bridge. So it's like a pop-up. It's very slick.
It's fun. You know, all the time that I've wasted in Google Earth, I could avoid it because I had to launch a whole other program. But now I can just waste time flying around the globe right in my browser.
Great. Another way to kill time. Thank you, Google. Mm-hmm. What would we ever have done without the Google?
So while we're on maps, they've gone nutty in Germany again on Street View. One city in Germany is not only are they requiring that they hash out faces and license plates on public streets, but also they want to put up public notices before they get there.
So we're coming to your town. We're going to take pictures. Just beware if you want to stay out of...
Hide
yourself.
Grandma inside.
Yeah, no. She said not be seen. Well, talking about privacy, Gina, you wrote an excellent article. In fact, an article I've been sending to people. Time to audit your Facebook privacy settings. Here's how. This is a Fast Company article by Gina Trapani. Was it difficult for you to figure out what to set and what not to set? I mean, this is the big issue is, and you point this out, when you go to Yelp or Pandora or Docs.com, you get this bar at the top that says, "Hey, Gina, Yelp is using Facebook to personalize your experience." And you have to click no thanks to opt out.
It's opt out versus opt in.
But worse than that, because your friends can still reveal information about you.
Yes, I had this interesting experience this week. So I'm Facebook friends with my nephew, who's, 14 or so. And he liked a friend of his status updates, a friend who I don't have access to. But because my nephew liked it, I could see that status update. And this whole conversation between all these 13 to 15 year old boys and girls, which I was certainly not meant to see. This was not meant for an adult to see. And it was because his friend had never changed the default setting, which is that my friends, even if parts of my profile are set to friends only access, my friends can share certain things like photos, like status updates. And that's the default. Even if you set your profile to private, there's still this other privacy settings panel that you have to go in and say, my friends can't share information about me either.
And then it says, are you sure? Allowing instant personalization will give you a richer experience as you browse the web. If you opt out, you will have to manually activate these experiences. Please keep in mind, if you opt out, your friends may still share public Facebook information about you. At least they tell you this. And then And then you have to go and check it again and say block it.
Yes.
And that's easy now because there's only three of them.
Right.
But what if there's 1,000 of them?
This is the thing. As Facebook adds more partners, you have to opt out.
Each one individually, or is there a global opt out?
There isn't a global opt-out. Each one individually.
You know, I used your global... You did recommend a global opt-out solution, and I did it.
Did you really?
I have deactivated my Facebook account. And what I did by the way, deactivating is kind of... It's not very committed, because all you have to do is log back in with your password, and it suddenly comes alive again.
Yes, well, that's what's so interesting, right? They make it difficult for you to just close your account. It's not just closing your account and everything's gone. There's deactivating it where they'll just hold on to all your data for you just in case you change your mind.
You might change.
And then
your
there's
mind.
Full on delete. And there's two. And there are two different places to do those things. So I feel like Facebook goes out of its way to make things confusing and hard to find, so that it forces the defaults on you.
Well, and the guilt trip they lay on you when you deactivate. Have you deactivated?
Yes. So, right. When you hit deactivate, it shows you pictures of all your friends' faces saying, like, Leo's going to miss you.
They're going to miss you.
Nick's going to miss you. Adam's going to miss you.
I was appalled. It was like,
it was amazing.
You don't want to quit. It made me want to quit more.
It's like trying to leave AOL in the day.
Right?
So
seriously.
I mean, and I have to say, this is not an easy decision. And one of the reasons I didn't delete, but I deactivated. And I said, my last status update on both my private and personal Facebook, my private and public Facebook account was, I am deactivating my account pending, until I understand what the privacy implications of all this are, I'm deactivating my account. So it's kind of nice that I don't have to delete everything. But I don't know. I'm really thinking.
You know, after our last show, Leo, I blogged that if you can't figure this out, you know,
how can anybody figure it out?
It's really complex, and it struck me that what I remember the old Seinfeld Bizarro episode. What I want is a Bizarro version of this, where I hold the identity stuff, I publish it, and I give permission to Facebook to use it.
Yeah, it's called opt in.
Right. It's
exactly.
Called opt in.
Also, it's the reverse. It's that I'm the host of my identity.
Right. Yes, that's right. I store it and I give you permission, Facebook.
Exactly.
But Facebook is saying, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. You store it with us. Of course, we have access to it. And then you give other sites permission to access what we know about you. That's what's going on with Pandora,
so
with Yelp.
It's so complex. And you don't know what there's a site I can't find right now that I got. There was a Twitter, like, Timmy, you know where Facebook is touching you? And it was a simple little thing that would show you what Facebook shows the world. It's awkward because you have to click on every single possible file and link. And I'll try to find it to put on the friend feed later. But it's interesting. We need that.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
zesty.ca/Facebook.
The amazing St. Gina.
That's a great site. No, I love that.
You shall find.
So here it is. Are you sure you want to deactivate your account? Justine will miss you. Rodrigo will miss you. Nick will miss you. Gary will miss you. Tony will miss you. They'll no longer be able to keep in touch with you. It's as if you leave Facebook, you don't exist.
Keep this account or we'll kill this dog.
And then after you say, I have a privacy concern, it says, please remember, you can always control the information you share and who can see it. Before you deactivate, please take a moment to learn more about how privacy works on Facebook.
You're getting smarmy.
And then this is other thing. Even after you deactivate, your friends can still invite you to events, tag you in photos, or ask you to join groups. If you opt out, you will not receive. So, in other words, I've deactivated, but still, I live on Facebook. I still have an account, in effect, until I delete that account. Well, I don't want to get emails. I don't want to know what they're doing with my image and so forth. So, and then you have to confirm your password. The best thing to do at this point would be to change it to something I don't know. Then you have to do this. Like, we don't want a robot to deactivate you. So you have to do a CAPTCHA. What the hell word is that?
Uranium.
Uranium?
No? Really?
U-R-A-N-I-U-M.
I guess
uranium.
It is. Uranium. Jeez, thank you. I needed some help.
Crowdsource the CAPTCHA.
And now, by the way, it's going to think for a really long time because I have 5,000 friends, and it actually took like an hour. It's ridiculous. So zesty.ca/Facebook. And there's also a great new post on Lifehacker, as long as we're talking about this, about what Facebook publicly publishes about you.
Yeah, that's the site.
That goes to this site. So, okay,
yep.
So the Lifehacker site is going to this site. Mm-hmm. So any information you see below is visible.
If you put in you, it probably won't work because you're now not visible, right?
Oh, I hope so. Well, let's find out. So do I enter it? Where do I enter it? Here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Algea Laporte. That's the... Now, as a public person... Oh, good. Data empty. I love that. That's good news.
I'm putting my name in there. See.
Are you still active?
You can put me and Leo.
I am
Jeff
still
Jarvis.
Active.
And is it with a space, Gina Trapani? Or is
no.
It?
No, just
okay.
One word.
Name... So I click one of these? Oh, yeah, look at all this stuff.
Yeah, one of these can show.
Oh, baby. Look at that. So I don't know what to do. Now, this is a connection. So these are some activities. So this just goes, this is using the API to get this data.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Oh, calls to stream has exceeded the rate of 100.
Everybody's
calls per
doing that
second.
Right now.
Everyone's doing it right now. Yeah,
let's all say Georgina.
The APSA.
We broke API it. Limit. We broke it. So that's copying.
But I mean, shouldn't Facebook provide just that? Facebook should say should be if Facebook wants to be the guardian of our identity, then they should be the guardian of our identity and act that way, not as the sleazy. I don't know, sleazy's a little strong, smarmy. Like direct auto salesman, which is what they're acting like now.
They do have that like view your profile as this person would see it
right.
button at some point in the profile editing process. So I give them that so you can see what other people would see. But the thing is that I was talking to a friend of mine about this, is like all of us geeks who are concerned about privacy and know what the implications are, like we're going to go through all those privacy panel settings and check our profile. But, you know, 15-year-old, you know, young kids are just going to, you know, stick with the defaults and just keep chatting with their friends. You know, defaults right. matter.
There's two responsibilities there. One is the default and understanding that. And the second is I think that there's an opportunity for Facebook to say we're going to help you with your identity throughout the web. But now I don't trust them to do that.
Right. Exactly.
Paul, what do you think about all this?
This is a tough one for me because I use Facebook. My family's on Facebook. I feel like you guys, I feel like they're not doing enough. In fact, I think they are actively working to make it hard to configure things like privacy. I cannot believe the controls that are in there. And even I have struggled with them. And as you guys were going through the site, I was using the same thing, looking at mine. And, you know, I'm pretty transparent about myself, but, you know, my wife's on there, my kid's on there. I just forwarded that link to my wife to say, let's make sure everyone's on the on the right page here. But
do you think there'll be a backlash?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you know, because increasingly this is the way that people get in touch with other people. I mean, I had dinner with college friends of mine. I haven't seen in over 20 years because of Facebook. So I recognize the value, but yeah, I mean, it's scary and it's confusing. I mean, to me, it's confusing. I was just looking at my Facebook settings once again, and I find myself instantly bewildered to the point where I don't even want to look at it. It's so confusing.
Mm-hmm. You know, interesting.
I just think they do a bad job.
And, you know, here's a cynical question. Do you think that that's intentional, or do you think that the push to give so much control led them down there?
I think it's immaturity. You know, I think it's just an immature service from young guys that don't have a lot of industry background.
I'm more cynical. I think they know exactly what they're doing. I liken this to Apple. Apple does what it does,
yes.
And can have
very much the same, Leo.
And they have two justifications. It you know, we're doing this to make it convenient for you. It really makes the web a more friendly place. All these connections are valuable, and that is true. But it also has this huge benefit to us. And I think Apple's done a very good job of you know, saying we're going to do what's good for us, but here's why it's good for you too. And
you know, Leo, when I went to spend time with these guys from IBM and Lotus, which is my price for getting on the Howard Stern show. But what struck me was that they did all the integration with all these internet things that we want. To do that, they had to basically recreate the internet and all its applications. But what impressed me, you really do get over your identity, who sees it, in what way, and so on. And it made me, you know, wishful for how that should work on the internet,
right?
And doesn't now because we have these folks who are trying to, you know, scam us. I think.
How was that, by the way, doing Howard Stern? Was that fun? You'd never been in the studio. You've been on Howard many, many, many times.
I've been on the phone a lot. I've never been in the studio, and I was in the studio, and he asked me what I was up to next, and I said a book about privacy, I hope, and then we got into it, and suddenly next. I knew I was telling the story of prostate cancer. So
you're revealing too much. But, you know, I think it's really good if here's an opportunity, Jeff, because if somebody like Howard Stern starts saying Facebook's gone too far, that carries so much more weight than if we say it. And people listen to him. Teenagers listen to him.
There's a weird thing in the tech industry, too, about sour grapes. I mean, I'm a Microsoft guy. Gene is a Google person. I mean, so we're complaining about Facebook. You're an Apple guy, right? I mean, unfortunately, people tend to see us in
right.
the scope of that. So obviously, well, of course we hate Facebook because we want this other thing to win, you know, whatever that might be. And that's not the case at all.
No, no.
I use Facebook. And like I said, I recognize the value, but I am a little freaked by it.
Yeah. You know, I think part of the issue with Facebook, too, is that it started out as a service that was, by default, everything was private, right? You had to have a college, you know, a .edu email address. You had to sign in to see anything. Mostly everything was private. And then it became, then more information became public. And that's wrong. I mean, so not that it's wrong. It's just that's the way that you freak out users. You can't start with with things being private and then make them public unless they change settings. If you offer a service from which everything is public and then you can opt to make that stuff private, it's a different story. It's kind of like how you can lower prices and not upset people, but you can't raise them.
Right.
You know.
Well, Facebook's got a difficult challenge. This is the narrative as I see it. So you know, this young guy Mark Zuckerberg basically wants to get laid. So he's in college. He's a college sophomore. And he can't meet girls because he's a nerd. So he creates the Facebook, which is essentially a site where he hopes he can get, you know, Harvard girls to enter information on so he can Mac on them. And you know what? It's viral. It goes viral. Why does it go viral? Because everybody wants to put their information on there so they can Mac on each other. They're college kids. So he suddenly gets this notion. He suddenly realizes, wait a minute, this is hugely valuable. By the way, I didn't get it until I really kind of thought about it. He's created a platform where I am incented to give them all, you know, just a bare all. And I get a payout. If you're a college kid, I get a payout. Now, even we as adults, we found there's a payout because we meet old friends. We couldn't connect with. There's these huge payouts. So there's an exchange going on. I give them all my information. Facebook says, now we'll only reveal it to those people you say you want it revealed to. Okay, I feel comfortable then. It's not super private, but at least I have some control over it. And I get this great payout. But now Facebook says, oh, wow, look at this. We got all this great information. This is a gold mine if we could just give this to advertisers. So they kind of give it to advertisers. So, we'll give it to third-party marketers. We'll protect it, but we'll give it. Because there's gold at the end of that rainbow. And now, all of a sudden, Facebook's saying, holy cow, we have a big – this is a huge gold mine. The more that we can get, the more we can sell. That's where they come up with Beacon. They get shut down a little bit. Okay, we'll back off. Now they say, well, what about Open Graph? Now we get everybody, now we got everybody on Facebook. How do we get them to give us more information about where they go, what they like, what they search for? Look at Google. They're getting all this great search information. How can we get that stuff? And they come up with Open Graph, which is just another way to pipe your information into Facebook so they can give it to marketers. I think it all makes perfect sense. Is that narrative
I think even more than that, Leo. I think it's right. And I also think that we see, Google causes 4 billion clicks a month to publishers, Bitly 2 billion, Facebook, God knows how many. I think we see that the human link becomes more powerful soon than search, and it really is a win against Google.
Is Google somehow better than Facebook in this regard? I don't know why I trust Google more. I mean, but it doesn't seem like...
what about Google Buzz,
Well, Buzz made a screw up. It wasn't of the same nature. It wasn't, to me, everything Facebook does is a cynical attempt to get more of my information so they can sell it.
And Buzz, went head over heels to try to fix it in the weekend, realizing, oops, we mixed the public and the private. That was a mistake.
Right. Google's business model somehow inherently more, less intrusive, though? I mean, I don't give them information willingly. I mean, they kind of follow me around in my searches. Well,
in all this discussion, I was tweeting about it and blogging about it after our last talk. And Rick Clow, who's a very good guy at Google, is now in charge of Google Profiles. And he's been talking a little bit. He's trying to get his head around it, but I think more about being what we want it to be, which is an open thing where we can publish it anywhere. I think that Google's mission is to organize the world's information. Facebook's should have been to help us organize ourselves. It's trying to organize us. I think the difference is information versus lives. Facebook is in our lives.
Yeah, and Google's was dealing primarily with public information. When you put up a public web page, you wanted to thank Google when they index it and send people your way, by putting it in their search results. I'm like, hey, thanks. That helps me and also makes me money. With Facebook, when Facebook makes my information public in backdoor ways that I wasn't aware of because the defaults changed, I feel really violated. It's a completely different thing. But Google started out dealing with the public web, and they mostly do deal with the public web, except for Gmail and your contacts and your reader and docs. And so far, except with the exception of Buzz, the notable exception of Buzz, they haven't screwed that up yet.
It's really great. We're going to take a break. It's a really interesting story. Paul Thurrott is here from Windows Weekly Podcast. He's also the guy behind the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, the author of Windows 7 Secrets, and an expert. We haven't really talked much about Microsoft's cloud initiatives. I'd love to do that with you, Paul, in just a little bit. Jeff Jarvis is at the airport, Miami Airport, and I'm so glad we were able to get him on from the airport. Are people giving you strange looks? He's frozen in time.
He's frozen.
Now we're giving him strange looks.
Unless that's the universal signal for hi. There he goes.
Oh!
Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com. That's his blog. Gina Trapani, smarterware.org. Founder of Lifehacker. Always great to have all three of you on board. Briefly, let me talk a little bit about GoToTraining, and then we'll get back to our conversation about Google and the cloud. GoToTraining is the latest product from Citrix. They are so fantastic. They've got, of course, GoToMeeting, GoToMyPC, great remote access products. Now they want to take on training and make training better. If you've just done corporate training of any kind online, you probably know how bad the state of the art is. This is all changing now with GoToTraining, just launched from Citrix. GoToTraining.com. You can try it free for 30 days. Of course, you get all the great benefits of Citrix's base platform, screen sharing. Your presenters can be in different locales anywhere in the world. Great voice over IP. Chat, but there's some additional features that are just for training. For instance, you can create a content library associated with your training, upload any document type, or link to any website. And that library can be used before, during, and after your training sessions. You can create and customize training tests to give attendees before, during, or after each training session. You can send out email invites to the session using the integrated email system. Where are you? We're starting. Integrated chat, polling features, feedback, testing, complete testing for the training. And here's the best part now. So you can have up to 200 people at your event, at your live session. And that's nice because you get some nice interactivity going and so forth. And then record it as it's going, and anybody can take that training anytime. Man, I have to take this training for the radio show on how not to swear on the air. And which, by the way, thank you, Howard Stern, because I wouldn't have to take this if it weren't for that massive FCC fine of Howard Stern. It's impossible. It's designed for people in the building, and I'm not in the building. And it just, I've been talking to the IT people. Just use GoToTraining. I wish I could get the, if you've had a bad training experience, if you're a trainer, if you're an IT professional, try it or get your training folks to try it. GoToTraining.com. 30 days free. It's all yours. GoToTraining.com. We're so glad to have them on This Week in Google. Thank you, Citrix, for your support. That's, talk about cloud. Now, I think Jeff, I don't know if he's gone off to take his plane in the cloud. Oh, there he is. He came back. There's Jeff Jarvis. Are you there, Jeff? Oh, you're muted.
My Sprint died, so I switched to Wi-Fi. If I get to be too unbearable in this way, as well as others, just cut me off.
You're always bearable. The always bearable
thing anybody's ever said about
the always bearable Jeff Jarvis. So I don't know how valuable these stats are, and you're very good, Paul Thurrott, at debunking stats like this. So I'm going to, I'll throw them out there. I don't know if this is your number, Jeff. The Android passes.
I don't have none. So
do okay, it. Good. Android passes the iPhone for web traffic in the U.S. Now this is based on AdMob, which publishes web ads in both Android and iPhone apps. Now, there are a lot more web ads from AdMob, I think, in, I don't know. They must be normalizing this for the number of, applications and so forth. Android traffic in the U.S. has increased to 46% of OS share compared to 39% for iPhone. Worldwide iPhone still number one with 46%, and Android only 25%.
What's the installed base of each? Do we have numbers?
You know, so, Google doesn't reveal that.
That Andy Rubin interview with the Times, I think he said that Android's 9% of smartphones.
Oh, interesting.
In the U.S.
And that was a very forthcoming interview. He told
us. It was a very forthcoming interview. Yeah, I'm just double checking. Pretty sure it was 9%.
AdMob, by the way, even though Google bought it, is not yet part of Google. They don't have regulatory approval. So, and of course, we know the install base of iPhones is, because Apple's just said it, and I think, was it 75 million? Anyway, it's an interesting stat. Android is, I think nobody would doubt that Android is coming on strong. Verizon announced this week that they are not going to carry the Nexus One phone, even though this has been on Google's, you know, price list. Coming in the spring, they said, nah, you know what? We're going to stick with our Droid line, and in particular, the HTC Incredible, which is incredible.
Indeed, incredible.
Don't you want it?
The New York Times says Android currently runs on 9% of the smartphones in the United States, according to ComScore. So
that sounds about right.
That AdMob number, I was confused about it. At first, I looked at it and said, this seems strange, right? At 9% smartphone usage, but it's ad impressions in relation to the entire market share of the operating system. Is that correct?
I think so.
According to the
That just means that more Android users see ads than iPhone users.
You're right. It's ad impressions.
It's ad impressions within the current market share. So that's interesting in that it might make Android an attractive platform for advertisers to work on. But we still have to remember that we're talking about 9% of the market in the United States. So that's a much smaller market than the iPhone. Because I looked at the number and said, I don't understand. Are all these Android users like tethering? I don't.
what are they doing?
Web traffic.
Are we using the web more because on Apple you're always on apps?
Or maybe more Android apps use AdMob because there are far more free apps on Android.
Yeah, that's possible.
38,000 apps now in the App Store as of a few weeks ago. That was your number, I think, last week. 38,000. That's pretty compelling. I mean, that's huge growth. 8,000 in a month?
Yeah, that is big growth. I got my Google I.O. Droid.
You did?
Yes, I did.
How do you like it?
I like it. It's okay. I like the Nexus One better.
Me too.
But I think I'm actually going to try developing something for Android. I'm going to try and put together a little app.
Oh, good.
Using the Droid. So I'm excited about that. So no 2.2, but maybe when Google I.O. happens, I'm supposed to bring the phone to I.O. Maybe they'll offer an update to the 2.2.
Yeah, we were speculating on that maybe that's when they would do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I am, actually now it's 50,000 apps, somebody just said. Is that right? Could that possibly be? Wow. The latest, I guess that's what Andy Rubin said.
Oh yeah, in that article, he did say 50K, didn't he?
50,000 apps. That's huge growth. So you don't want an Incredible, huh? I want an Incredible. I'm very tempted to throw this Nexus One out.
Yes, no, I do.
8 megapixels.
No mistake about it. Yeah, yeah. It's
replaces the trackball with optical. It is incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. It's well named, although I don't know. The name is like, come on. Obvious adjective.
Once you've gone to Incredible, what is in the...
There's nothing else to look forward to.
You hit the end of the superlative line.
It's true.
The next word up is a curse.
Fucking unbelievable.
Leo, you got a little New York coming out.
Yeah, this phone is effing unbelievable.
It's like Andrew Dice Clay over there. We could get Dice Man to do the ads.
Wouldn't that be?
That'd be the greatest brand ever.
It's the unbelievable. It's effing unbelievable, this phone. Everybody should want it.
You know, I decided that if you all were going to ask me about the Gizmodo thing, that I was going to take out my Brooklyn accent.
All right. So congratulations.
You got a problem with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a problem with that?
Yeah. You just stole an iPhone and are being investigated by the Santa Clara React team. What are you going to do next?
What?
What do you want? You know, I don't know if Jason Chen says that, but he should.
He should.
Do we have an opinion on that? I mean, we've talked it like incessantly about it since Twit on Sunday, and then Mac Break Weekly. We had Denise Howell, the attorney, come on. You guys, you're Jeff. Maybe, you know, as a representative of the ink stained wretch class. Are there shield laws in New York State?
Not hold on, I think New York State does. No federal, of course. And you know, there was a Atlantic blog argument that this ruins journalism because it opens up the shield. But hello, journalism has woken up to everybody. You have to deal with this. If I mean, basically, what would happen in an open world is the Tony Soprano would start a blog and say, "Hey, I'm a journalist."
Oh, so it's the HTC. Bada bing.
What is this podcast about again?
I don't know, Paul. I don't know.
We're all up in the cloud.
We're in the cloud. Our heads are in the clouds. What is Microsoft up to in the cloud? I mean, look, they got the cloud guy. You're talking about Lotus earlier, Jeff. Yeah. I mean, Ray Ozzie, who created Lotus Notes, has been working at Microsoft now for how many years? 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
And everybody thought, well, as soon as Ray Ozzie arrives, Microsoft's going cloud. Did it?
Actually, it did. But, of course, because it's Microsoft, it's happened in such a stealth fashion. It's like no one noticed, you know. To this day, Microsoft's biggest cloud services, such as they are the cloud services it's had for a long time. You know, the Windows Live stuff that used to be MSN, the Hotmail stuff. You know, I mean, that's still very popular and will, I'm sure, continue to be popular. But obviously, they're trying to move their server products to the cloud through Windows Azure and the other Azure services. They have hosted versions of Exchange and Communication Server and SharePoint and so forth that they're selling to businesses. But, you know, it's a tough transition. Microsoft obviously has made billions and billions on very traditional software, and the world is changing. So, you know, they're kind of scurrying to catch up in many ways.
I was talking about live typing in Google Docs and in Wave with a Microsoft guy this week, and he said, oh, well, you know, Microsoft has that.
We've done that for years.
And I said,
there's a lot like that.
And he said, yeah, in the rich client, which I assume that he was talking about Microsoft Word being the rich client, and Live, if in the rich client, if you're hooked up over SharePoint correctly or on Live, you can kind of watch people update a document at the same time. I had no idea. I mean, I feel like part of the issue with Microsoft's cloud stuff is like, whenever a cloud announcement happens, I'm always just like, what does this mean? Like, I'm not really sure. I can't parse it like for an individual user. And I feel like maybe it's because their launches are primarily for enterprise, but I rarely get excited about it because I'm always like, oh, but I have to have an Exchange server with SharePoint, and you know, I just don't.
Yeah, you're not the only one who doesn't get excited about Exchange.
Yeah. Everybody hates Exchange. Right.
Don't worry about that.
It's hard to get excited about.
I've asked this publicly, but I've asked Microsoft, you know, if Exchange Server is so great, why doesn't Hotmail run on it? You know, you know, there's a good point. A lot of stuff going on there, but, you know, it's been long enough. I mean, they bought Hotmail back in what, 1994, something like that. If they were going to move it to Exchange, they would have done it a long time ago. So clearly that's not happening.
It was on Linux. They moved it off Linux.
Yeah.
All right. I think you're right not to go back to this Lotus thing, but it's similar. I ignore the enterprise world because I live out here in the, you know, onesies and twosies world of ours. And there actually is stuff going on in the enterprise world, which I've always made fun of. Mm-hmm. But they do have the opportunity to integrate in ways that we don't have because people are trying to grab onto standards like Facebook and Twitter and not make them standards.
So they also have security controls. You know.
Right. So it almost seems that my eyes were open to this extent that there is potentially some development that can happen in the enterprise world that can get them past the web.
Sure. I think one of the criticisms of Ray Ozzie is that when he arrived at Microsoft, you know, he talked about stuff like Live Mesh or the Groove products that moved into Office. And in many ways, it seems like he's been re-implementing the same kind of software solution, you know, over time at different places. And, of course, a lot of the Microsoft stuff has sat still for a few years now. So there's some confusion going on there. But I think this year is going to be a big one for the Windows Live stuff. And it's worth noting, too, that, you know, Microsoft's consumer online services are actually used by several hundred million people. And they are, in fact, more popular than the equivalent Google services or the Yahoo services or whatever in most cases. So
yeah, we talk about Docs all the time, but Docs is a fraction. Gmail is a fraction of Hotmail.
It is, yeah. And actually, I do have some numbers there, and these are from Microsoft, so take this with their grain of salt, if you will. But according to Microsoft, and this is less than 30 days old, there are about 400 million people that use Hotmail every day, 175 million for Gmail and 200 million for Yahoo.
And we make this big deal about 400 million Facebook users. that's a month. There's 400 million Hotmail users a day.
Yeah, and Microsoft says that there are actually over 500 million active users of all of their Windows Live services every month. And those are people that use email, instant messaging, the social networking stuff, and the portals. About a half a billion.
Who are these people? Are they primarily U.S.?
So actually, I don't actually have that data in front of me, but that's obviously worldwide. But the Windows Live stuff tends to be very popular in the United States. Curiously, there are countries in Europe where it's incredibly popular, and then a couple of countries in Asia. And I don't know those off the top of my head, but I want to say it's something like France and Germany, countries like that where the percentages are actually higher.
Really?
In whatever countries, for whatever reasons. But yeah, I mean...
And you were going to correct me, and I want to correct myself. It's FreeBSD, mm-hmm. not Linux, that Hotmail was originally...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's interesting the way you said that, like, who are these people? Because it is... No, but that's actually really interesting because... Nobody knows who these people are. I mean, they're quite, well, because they're not advocates for the technology.
It's not us. That's why.
Right. It's a good reminder that, like, I'm, sealed in my nerd bubble.
Right.
They're not kids. I see more people on Yahoo Mail than I ever see on Hotmail or on, on Microsoft service.
Yeah. I mean, for whatever it's worth, I mean,
is it all Microsoft, spam accounts?
What's that else?
Well, 400 million spammers.
I happen to use Gmail and Google Calendar and all that stuff myself right now. I anticipate that changing over time, but part of the reason is that Microsoft hasn't gotten the integration pieces in that they need. You know, they have tremendous desktop software and server software and all that kind of stuff, and they have actually very decent online services as well. But there are weird missing chunks of integration that are very important. So, for example, their online calendar service doesn't integrate with any mobile phone right now.
It's not even their own.
Wow.
And not even their own. And that's right. Wow. I mean, that's ludicrous, and it's worse than it sounds because this dates back a year now. So we're waiting for this new generation of Windows Live services to hit when this will all be rectified. And that's fantastic. But why wasn't this one thing, fixed over the past year? I have no idea.
Well, it signals a lack of commitment a little bit to me. I'm like, well, they've got this whole business where they sell software that comes in boxes on shelves at Staples. Like, they're not gonna worry about getting their calendar, their live calendar down to their mobile phone.
How much longer are they gonna be able to do that?
Is that the wrong way to look at it, Paul? I mean, it concerns me. Like, this is Google's business, their whole business. So I know that they're totally, committed to this is their only platform.
Right. So Google is a relatively young company. Came of age on the internet. All of their services essentially internet based. They do have some, traditional software products like Chrome and so forth. But mostly they perceive the world from the internet. That's a huge advantage when you're talking about online services. Microsoft sees the world from, a traditional software sense, like you said, literally floppy disks and boxes. Making that transition is hard because they made so much money doing it the old way. There are still people at that company, I'm sure, who are thinking, what are we doing? And you can look at things like Microsoft Office, where they move so slowly to the web, away from this old business model. Office is still a very traditional software product. But on the other hand, with this version, you can do things like buy Office online, literally digitally install it, stream it down to your computer. It's still, that traditional software, but they're getting there, but it, I think it's just
a transition. Who here uses Office online or off versus Google Docs?
I use Office.
I just had to send a fax today for reasons I don't even want to get into, but I wound up using Word and I was like, oh, I need a fax template. And I actually, within Word, you're able to choose a template and auto downloads it. So you're browsing the online gallery. And then I chose the template that I wanted and auto downloaded. And I was super impressed. I was like, oh, this is a really nice integration. And I had a nice fax template and used it. I use a text editor or Docs, but there's some editors who want to use Word. If I want something to look really nice and format it well, I use Word.
That's the only time I've used Word.
I did in Word.
Yeah, for books. Yeah. Publishers want Word.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned so much with formatting as I am with the functionality around spell and grammar checking and all that stuff. But you raised another interesting point there because Word is a traditional software product, one that's been around for a long, long time, has picked up these kind of online capabilities over time. Whereas a product like Google Docs is going to come at it from the internet point of view, and it will pick up more traditional, software type design features over time as well. So they're kind of, they're going to meet in the middle at some point, right? But right now they just approach the same thing from completely different points of view.
We've talked on the on Windows Weekly, Paul, about how Google Docs is very feature light compared to something like Microsoft Word. But so, for some people, people like Gina, maybe Jeff and me as well, that's a feature, not that's a benefit. We don't want all those features.
Yep. Well, you know, Microsoft has now, and it's just starting to roll out their Office web applications, right? Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, which are their cloud-based versions of those Microsoft Office applications. So I've just started using the Word web app as my word processor for my daily work, because this is stuff that ends up on the web anyway. And it turns out moving something that you're typing in a web browser to something, you know, to some other form in a web browser is actually very natural and it works very well. This thing is dramatically more full-featured than Google Docs from an editing perspective, I would say, not from a...
That's part of the problem, though, isn't it? I mean, going through Microsoft features to find something is like going through Facebook's privacy to fix it.
Yeah, well, that would be true, I think, of like the Word application, but actually the web app version sits, I would say, somewhere halfway between, you know, Google Docs and traditional Word, you know, from a functionality standpoint. So, I mean, just looking at, for example, Word 2010, the desktop app has like 6-7 tabs of toolbars and so forth, whereas the web version is 3. And it's not just 3 tabs worth of toolbars. It's 3 really dramatically scaled down sets of functions. It's all the basic stuff. You know, in fact, I haven't done this yet, and maybe I should, but if I were to compare this to Google Docs, I bet they're pretty close, you know.
Does it require Silverlight?
No. But if you have Silverlight, it's actually a better performing version, I guess, if you have Silverlight in the browser.
Is it JavaScript?
I don't know how they implement it. I'm not sure.
Huh.
But it works across Chrome, Firefox, IE.
Yeah. JavaScript. Yep. That's interesting. Yeah.
And it's a way for a Mac user or a Linux user to have what has traditionally been a Windows-only experience, because this thing looks and works a lot like Office 2010 on Windows.
Right.
Oregon has just announced it's going to bring Google Apps to all of its classrooms statewide. You do keep seeing wins for Google Docs over Microsoft.
Right. So, I mean, I would say with some exceptions, for example, Office Web Apps is free. So that's free for anybody. But, you know, when you look at Microsoft's enterprise cloud services, like business, they have awful names, but essentially Hosted Exchange, Hosted SharePoint, and so forth. You know, there is no free version like there is on Google.
So schools like the free stuff.
Yeah, and this is tough because, well, schools actually do get Microsoft stuff for free, although they don't get the Exchange stuff. They get the, you know, the Hotmail, Windows Live stuff. So there are colleges all over the United States that can use Google or Windows Live as the back end, right? And it has your EDU address or whatever. So those two companies both do the same thing there. But Google does offer Google Apps for free. There's a free version of it. And that's actually a huge deal because I think, you know, small businesses of any kind actually, you know, they're always constrained from a financial standpoint. And I think a lot of them can get away with using the free version. And Microsoft just doesn't have that. And that's something I've been riding them on because, you know, the base price for, you know, Hosted Exchange is basically $5 per month per employee, but you have to have at least 5 people doing it. And it gets kind of expensive over time.
Is docs.com the same as the Office general Office web docs?
Yeah. So actually, docs.com is Office web applications. It's the same exact platform. The only difference is that for collaboration purposes or for sharing purposes, you're going through your Facebook contacts list instead of your Windows Live.
I think that's going to help them a lot. That's going to introduce a lot of people. I bet you a lot of people didn't even know that you could use Office online.
Well, I think that was I didn't know this. So, I mean, the day they announced this, you suddenly have this light go off in your head and you realize this is a platform that Microsoft is going to be basically handing out to people and they'll be able to customize it in their own ways. Now, there aren't a lot of Facebooks in the world, but you know, companies like Facebook's that have lots of, you know, people using that service will be able to use their own branded versions of Office web applications. It's kind of interesting.
Let's see, before we get to our tip and tool and number, none of which we have, is there Is there any other subjects or stories you fellows would like to talk about?
Nothing? No, let me briefly, I wanted just to talk about that HTC thing.
Yeah.
The deal there actually is that Microsoft is going after the same intellectual property and patent licensing concerns that it has with Linux. You know, Android is based on Linux. So Microsoft has actually contacted a bunch of Android handset makers to talk to them about cross-licensing of patents. Now, HTC doesn't have their own mobile patents like a Motorola would or one of the bigger companies that's been around for a while. So they can't do a cross-licensing agreement. So the HTC agreement, HTC is actually going to pay Microsoft to indemnify itself against any patent claims. But I think you're going to see more agreements like that in the future, just as we did with Linux companies between Linux and Microsoft. So I think this is just an extension of that.
So they had no choice because they didn't have any patents. HTC had to settle with Microsoft.
Well, these companies will all reach. There was no settlement. No one sued anyone.
There's a licensing agreement, I should say.
They contacted. They reached an agreement. So yeah. The agreement was that Microsoft would not pour salt on them and destroy them forever.
Does that help them in?
You know, essentially.
Yeah, right. Does that help them in the Apple lawsuit?
Well, I think HTC, you mean?
Yeah. As Apple's suing them, of course.
No, not at all. And in fact, I've seen some speculation around that. I don't see how it could. I mean, actually, that's not necessarily true.
Depends if these are competing
patents. Yeah, it depends on right. So if Microsoft has patents around multi-touch or things like that, actually, yes, I suppose.
See, I didn't realize. You know, normally, in a patent lawsuit situation, it's kind of mutually assured destruction. You've got patents. We've got patents. You sue us, we'll sue you back. I didn't realize HTC had no patents.
So HTC is kind of a small company.
They're very vulnerable. They're completely vulnerable. And that explains now why Apple did not go after Google.
Right.
It went after HTC because HTC has no patents.
Google has an endless supply of cash. They could fight this forever.
Right.
And probably has a lot of patents.
And they could countersue as well. So, right. so go after HTC. Maybe they'll make a deal with Apple. It's nibbling around Google, and I guess Microsoft's nibbling around Google too, because Microsoft's not suing Google; they're going after the handset manufacturers.
Right. So, anybody else who uses Android, are they in the same position that HTC's in now?
Yes, and in fact, that's one of the things in the press release. They don't name names, but they say are in contact with a bunch of other Android. Yeah. If you're making an Android phone, there'll be a knock at your door.
Is it accepted that Microsoft legitimately has these? I mean, in other words, is Linux? If I do a Linux distro, do I license this stuff from Microsoft? Is that generally accepted?
Hundreds of companies have already done this.
Oh, yes. Interesting.
Yeah, this has been one of those many quiet Microsoft things. You know, they've gone to the big companies, they've gone to the small companies. And the basic deal is, you know, you're indemnifying not just the company itself that is creating some Linux-based solution, but also their customers. You know, so it's a... presumably someone has actually looked and said, oh, yes, you do have a valid patent for whatever, but I mean, obviously, as a part of these agreements, none of those companies are talking about anything like that. So that's just speculation, I guess.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And would you know what areas the patents are in? The Linux patents are the Microsoft patents against?
No, I mean, right? No, I don't. Hmm. And, you know, Google as a very open company, and this was something that Andy Rubin discussed in that New York Times interview, there are actually benefits to that, but there are also, you know, downsides to it. You know, they release the source code for all the stuff that they're doing. Microsoft can look at it and say, here, 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 you know, and then they have their basis for going after those companies.
Ina Fried writing at CNET says, it's not clear to what degree, if any, the Microsoft agreement will help HTC in its battle against Apple. However, she quotes Gartner analyst Ken Dulaney. Mm-hmm. He says that's the key battle for HTC. He says if this doesn't help in some way in HTC against Apple, I don't think HTC gains much. Well, Microsoft wasn't there to help HTC. Microsoft was there to get its license fees, obviously.
Hey, Leo?
Well, yes, sir.
I think I'm taking off.
All right. Jeff Jarvis, he is the blogger at BuzzMachine.com. Thank you for making that yeoman-like effort to get with us. We'll see you, Ben. You're back in New York.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jeff.
Safe flight, Jeff.
And there he goes. He's gone. He's gone. Fascinating story. And, of course, the big story, once again, to recap, and Paul broke it on the show right at the beginning, HP is buying Palm for $1.2 billion. making the folks at Elevation Partners breathe a huge sigh of relief because they were into Palm for several hundred million dollars. That's Bono's venture firm, and run by Roger McNamee. And they put a pretty big investment in Palm late in the game, hoping that WebOS would take off. Palm's stock price got more and more depressed. Now the HP deal is, I think, valuing it at $5.70, which is, I think, a pretty hefty premium over its last price. $1.2 billion for Palm.
Jeff's number of the week.
Yeah, let's make that the number of the week. How about, do you have a tip that you'd like to pass along?
I do. I did a couple, but I do have one that we actually didn't cover. YouTube.com/store. You can rent movies, 48-hour rental, 99 cents to $3.99. You pay with Google Checkout. I think Read Write Web wrote about this. It wasn't really a big launch. The selection of movies, it seems to be sort of indie films and documentaries, but there's some good stuff here. The September issue, actually, which Leo,
that's
you and I talked, chatted about.
Movie. Yeah. I love it. I watched it because of you.
Yeah, that's $3.99. Precious, which was a fantastic movie. Brothers, don't see that. That wasn't so good. But there are some really good movies here. And so, like I said, I haven't tried this. But if you click on one of the movies, $3.99, you pay with, so you rent, so it's rent for 24 hours.
And it's stream, right?
It's stream, yeah. You complete the payment. It's a Google Checkout payment. So this is kind of interesting. Another way to, I guess we don't need another way to rent movies, but, you know, kind of interesting that YouTube is doing this. It'll be interesting to see where this goes.
I wonder why they're doing this.
Kind of just get in the game, I guess, right? I mean,
you know what's interesting? When you do rent that movie, then on the right, you get a bunch, as you do on anywhere on YouTube, a bunch of other videos. Some of them
related to?
Yeah, some of them movies, but some of them just YouTube videos. Including, it looks like some pirate versions of the movie. Yeah, here's Girl with a Pearl Earring, part 5 through 9.
Interesting.
So you could rent it, or you could watch the fake version on YouTube.
And well, another kind of really minor video-related thing now is that you can narrow your search results for TV shows by season.
I saw that. That was going to be one of the tools I talked about. I love that.
Yeah, you kind of drill down on the sidebar there. Kind of interesting.
Because I do that all the time. Is that in the show options column? I got to keep that thing open.
Yeah, hit show options and then click on videos. Okay. Under all results, and then under all videos, you can see episodes. Oh. Yeah, I mean, you really have to drill down to see this, and then you can filter by season.
There's the episode guide.
Yeah, so I just searched for The Wire, so I have season 1 through season 5.
That's neat.
Oh, and then there's a drop down of like you can choose which episode. Wow. So, you know, when you're trying to find that episode of The Office that you missed, you can literally drill down by the number, the season and the number.
And some of these are YouTube links. I see an Amazon link. Great. This will help me pirate television. That's fantastic.
Exactly. There you go.
Look at that. That's great. Everywhere you can find it. Well, thank you. That is a great tip. We already had a number, and my tool was actually going to be Google Earth in the browser. We showed that earlier. No, it's fine.
Sorry.
I don't mind. That's a great tool, and we got a nice tour of it. So there you go.
Sorry about that.
I want to thank you so much, Paul Thurrott, for joining us, giving us the Microsoft perspective and the scoop on HP. Paul Thurrott is the host of Windows Weekly, one of our great podcasts, a really great podcast. Highly recommend it if you haven't heard it, at twit.tv/ww. He's also the man in charge of the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And it's a good place to go if you want to know what's up with the latest Windows. There's Paul with his mug. Paul's mug with a mug. Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And, of course, his book is Windows 7 Secrets. And the new one coming out, Windows Phone Secrets. He's writing it right now. Look at that. You really did get that blog post up. HP acquires Palm. Look at that.
That's what I talk about, productivity.
Multitasking.
Serious multitasking going on there.
Multitasking. That's fantastic. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org and the author of The Complete Guide to Google Wave, completewaveguide.com. There was some wave news I forgot.
Yes. You can remove people from a wave.
Yes.
Kind of embarrassing.
Finally. Just a small feature, but much needed.
Yeah. But one of those features that was just like so conspicuously missing.
Yeah.
So you can remove.
You can remove somebody. Good, because there's a lot of people in waves I want to remove right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
CompleteWaveGuide.com. Well worth getting. Yep. Thank you, Gina. Thank you, everybody, for being here. You can watch this show live every we do it now at a new time. I should remind you, those of you who subscribe to the download, we do it at a new time, Wednesday afternoons, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. That's, I think, 2000 UTC at live.twit.tv. Download, of course, at twit.tv/twig. And we also have a Twig channel on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. And you can watch all the latest shows, as you can with Paul Thurrott's shows as well. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google.